Welcome to the Tracking Connections podcast, and thanks for listening.
We feature voices from around the world sharing stories of working intentionally with deep nature connection in ways that transform lives, families, projects, and communities. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aiden.
And I'm John.
And we are your hosts from Living Connection First.
Welcome. Sarah here. I'm with John and Victoria Mew from Red Squirrel Resources.
Yes, Red Squirrel Resources, everyone. And Victoria is a treasure. She's currently living in the UK with her young son, Lawrence. And I've known her and her mom for this long, long time. And it's just wonderful to have you here. Tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got here, because you're one of the treasures of the UK Art of Mentoring Eight Shields movement.
Oh, thank you both. Well, it's really, really lovely to be here with you both. And my journey started a long time ago. I was growing up in London, and it was a summer where my parents were actually separating, but we didn't consciously know it yet. And we got taken on a holiday with my mum, and then one with my dad. And the one with my mum was with Thomas Shawcorn at Trackways, doing family camp, bushcraft, wilderness survival things. And my mum picked up some Tom Brown books there, and also your audio series, Seeing Through Native Eyes. And that became part of my world. And I think the fact that my parents were separating then, and it could have been a time of real insecurity, like your safety net's just removed, I got it replaced by the whole of nature that no one can ever remove from me. And this sense of belonging and like, well, you know, nature's got my back, and actually I can be held and like weep into the earth. Like, that became my story through my teen years. And it was the following summer when I was 13, I kind of followed in your footsteps. So I first came out to New York, anyways, at the Appalachians to do coyote tracks, which you'd set up and moved on from. And I think it was Tracy Pizzo.
Yes, that's right. Tracy Pizzo,
running it at the time. And we had the most epic month of adventures, my brother and I, doing a 2-week kind of standard intro one and then a 2-week scouting thing, where I still get exhilarated reliving the stories when I tell them to children that I work with now, of the antics we got up to, of overnight stalks on mass group shelters, trying to sneak in and having hidden stuff, lost property clothing in the outside of the shelter, and like rigging it up partway through the night to cause a distraction to get into the teepee and all sorts of things. And then, yeah, I journeyed through school with these touch-ins at least once a year, both in America and continuing with Thomas and Trackways in the UK, that I just felt like I was in on this secret of life whilst, you know, social stuff at school was going on and was not where I wanted to be. There was this other world that I felt a complete sense of being at home and myself in. Yeah, it really culminated for me when I went and did the residential program at Wilderness Awareness School at 18 as like my gap year. And in a way, the culture there at that point in time anyways was what was cool was being yourself. So for an 18-year-old, it was just the most fertile land to kind of grow in and become. So thank you for all your legacies that I've been hopping around on. And it was after that, it was the end of that year that I volunteered on Art of Mentoring, which was a very different Art of Mentoring than I then became to know, because it was like 30 adults, 3 clans, and maybe 3 facilitators. And it blew my mind. It suddenly brought everything from the year distilled into 1 week.
Where was that one, Victoria?
That was in Cedar Lodge.
Oh, that Art of Mentoring?
Yeah.
Oh.
It was a Wilderness Awareness School Art of Mentoring. And it just blew my mind. It was like, this is the piece that's missing in the UK. I feel like the bushcraft's there, the wilderness survival there, the philosophy is there. But this regenerating culture and the natural cycles, invisible learning piece, I hadn't come across it in the UK at that point. And I felt like this is what's needed. And that then became the next quest to bring the Art of Mentoring to the UK.
Well, and succeed you did. I think I went to my first one at Moccasey Farms. I think that was my first one. I'm not sure if that was the first one, but...
No, you actually came. I'll jog your memory. You came with a merry band to Worcestershire in the center of England in 2010. And you spent a long time in the evenings, I believe, at a pub down the road from Green and Away in that tented village.
That's right, because Green and Away had a strict 10 p.m. curfew, and there was all these musicians. There was Merlin and Cosmo Sheldrake and Evan McGowan and Ken Clarkson, the banjo player, and banjos are loud, and musicians get started at 10. They don't go to bed at 10. And Jerry Brady on the bones, and we ended up going over all the time to the Bear and the Ragged Staff, and they would lock us in, and I don't want to tell them, say that out loud. They didn't really lock us in. This didn't really happen. I don't want to get them in trouble, but we would play music there till 1, 2, 3 in the morning, and they kept bringing more and more of their family and friends. So I had two Art of Mentorings that year. I had this crazy folk bluegrass sort of mentoring, and then in the day, I was trying to be awake and run a good camp. But we did a good job. Oh, Paul Rayfield was there also that year, Odawa Peacemaker, yeah. So yeah, that is a week to remember. Holy, yes.
Yeah. The following year was at Moxie Farm in 2011.
Yeah. Okay, right. Yeah. Yeah, beautiful.
I just want to say for listeners who may not be familiar with what Art of Mentoring is a cultural regeneration experience that's usually about a week long that has a layered village that's very intentionally orchestrated and represents archetypes, and there's activities for embodying archetypes and experiencing interactions with basically the with natural design cycles. And those of you that have done our natural design cycles trainings, you know what we're talking about, and maybe are curious, how has the Art of Mentoring program progressed over the last now 14 years? Has it been going the whole time?
In the UK?
In the UK, yeah.
Before I answer that, I just want to say what a great summary. It's so hard to distill what the Art of Mentoring week is, and didn't you just do a great job? It hasn't been annual. I think there were 4 or 5 years in a row from 2010 where it was annual, and then there were a couple of years off. There's been different people stepping in and out of the convening roles, and I don't think I can carry on talking about it without naming Maeve Gavin, who was a part of the group that I originally got the 2010 Art of Mentoring to manifest with. And yes, she passed away since in that time, but carried the baton when I stepped out at a certain point. Yeah, and I just want to honor her because she was such an incredible woman of passion and zest and humor, and really did a lot in bringing grief tending in the UK, both in her own work and to weave it into the Art of Mentoring Week. Yeah, I really love that woman. A lot. And then along with other people, Peter Cowell's been a really amazing keystone in having the energy to be convening these events. He was a major part of organizing the 2017 one down in Devon, which was, I think, probably the last. Oh, no. I saw John again in 2019 back at what is that amazing center in Scotland called?
Gosh, I can't remember the name of it, but it was the biggest Art of Mentoring in history. There was Royal Grounds, and it was held by somebody in the royal family, right? But he'd turned this whole huge estate into this beautiful kind of regenerative kind of forest situation.
The Falkland Estate.
The Falkland Estate, thank you. That was the biggest Art of Mentoring I'd ever seen. There was unbelievable numbers of people, and it was absolutely harmonious and beautiful and healing, and there was such a huge, like the village hearth is when we get, you know, local volunteers often to come in and set up things, you know, like the people who tend the village fire or the people who run the wellness tent, or there was a village building tent, which I was involved with Deborah Benham. And, you know, there was all these wonderful things going on, this beautiful camp in the wilderness for the kids and, you know, and then there was traditional Scottish storytellers and musicians and Barry Moses, who is a Salish Kootenai healer, traditional healer, came over from North America, from where he is in Spokane, Washington, with Mark Morey. And I just remember what an incredible experience. The energy was so strong there. And it was such an interesting juxtaposition, you know, this sort of deep nature connection camp in this estate, you know, with these old stone buildings as our base. And, you know, that was quite amazing. And of course, Jerry Brady, not to miss an Art of Mentoring, showed up for that one too. But yes, thanks for mentioning Maeve, because Maeve was such a beautiful person, and she is definitely missed. She contributed so much in her life. So yeah, appreciate you bringing back Maeve here.
Mm, had some good candle chats with her lately.
Nice. Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about Red Squirrel Resources and what that's about.
Yeah, well, I think I got so much from the Nature Connection and mentoring that came into my life relatively early on. And it's really come from a impulse to give back and to help impact other people getting connected as deeply as possible, and recognizing that if it's limited to what I can do in my own time, it's really limited, and how to just maximize the reach, really. So after being at Wilderness Awareness School, I'd come back, I did university, and then I set up a little Nature Connection organization in Sussex, England, called Cultivating Curiosity, which is still going. And that's doing weekly home ed programs, as well as in 2012, after the Sussex Art of Mentoring here, Anna Richardson had this vision and really request for her son, who's also my godson, to establish deep Nature Connection mentoring on a regular basis that would go throughout his teen years. So we set up monthly Nature Mentoring, which is a day a month for children. And it's really great. So that started in 2012. And we've now got a whole cohort of young mentors that are stepping in to facilitator roles, because they've come all the way through and cycled back round as volunteers and are now fully fledged, as it were. So I realized I couldn't do more than I could do in my person hours, and was on all these forums for Forest School in the UK, which is a mainstream movement to get children outside much more. But the training's like 5 days, or has even moved fully online, which breaks my heart a bit, because you've got teachers doing an online training and then doing their best to take children out and give them a meaningful experience in nature. And there were all these questions that were just so basic and would kind of make me infuriated sometimes, of like, how have they not been resourced to give the children more? They clearly want to, they're passionate, and they're like totally under-resourced. And so then I just decided, I lived a lot of these teachings for so long and felt I had a lot to offer, that I decided to start a project of basically making a video library. Somebody said, could I write a follow-up book? I'd written a book with Anna Richardson and Marina Robb in my mid to late 20s, I can't remember exactly when now, called Learning with Nature. And I just, when I try and learn a game from a book, I find it tricky to imagine it. It's like hard work. And maybe that's my dyslexia, I don't know. But I just thought, if you just see it. So I started creating this video library. And so for every activity or resource that links to others and they come up to, there's a short video. Normally it's like between 4 minutes and 10 minutes, a couple of them a bit longer, on that game, that story, that foraging activity, the whittling project, that skill. Yeah, it's really broad. All the kind of the sensory awareness things, blindfold, string walks, it's all in there. There's over 220 video resources there now. And alongside each one, there's a written summary going through what you need, how to do it, all the key information, and also the kind of risk assessment considerations that you have to tick box for covering all your insurance things. So it just makes it really easy for anyone, from whatever skills that they've got, to deepen what they're offering children outdoors, or adults outdoors, frankly, as well.
Wow, thank you. That's an incredible gift. That sounds like a huge amount of work and a lot of time. And you just put it out there for people.
Yep, pretty much. It has been. It's been a labor of love, and at times blood, sweat, and tears. But yeah. It's been amazing. So at the time I launched it just before my son was born in February 2020, and had at that point committed to releasing 4 new things every month, which I then scaled back to 3 every month at one point, because it was just too much to keep on top of with a little person to tend as well. Yeah, and we're going to change the format of it, because now there's such a big library. I think I'm going to cut myself some slack and give myself a rest from the pressure of more content delivery each month. So yeah, but it's a really rich library, and I'm really proud of it, actually.
Well, you should be proud of it. I would love to know, Like, have you heard feedback from people who have managed to get through some of it? Because I doubt very many people go through all of it, but I would love to meet the people that went through all of it, all 220 plus videos, and practiced them all, because their life would be different if they really did them.
Their life would be different. That's true.
And you get to hear from people that have used these resources and...
Yeah, I have heard from people. Actually, like, surprisingly, there were people in Australia signing up and like that I hadn't no idea it would reach, you know. So when you think about these things, and interesting collaborations coming out of it too. Some people have found the way that we categorize the library really helpful, so they can just look for like naturalist information. So my friend Dan Puplet, who I'm sure you remember.
I love Dan, yes.
Incredible naturalist, and has done like feature ones on different species. And another friend of mine, who I think you've yet to meet, really values what you've brought in terms of all the world of bird language. He's done a series on birds' vocalizations and the different species, their habits. So there's those kind of things. And yeah, I think people just have found it really helpful the way we've organized it. And we've had feedback to refine that over time and to be able to find what they know they're looking for, and then what they don't know they're looking for pops up as well. And they're like, oh my gosh, there's this too. So it's clever what computers can do, I guess. And the irony of being a Nature Connection, passionate person of Nature Connection, and then ending up behind a screen for hours. But you must know that one too.
Yeah, we can relate to that. It is an irony, and it's such an amazing opportunity, like you said, at this time where things are imminent, right? Like, and there's so many people looking for these kinds of resources. So just knowing that this is available, we will share with folks. And I'm curious how, like you had reflected in the beginning of this conversation, at coming out of Wilderness Awareness School, having that deep nature connection, and then going into an art of mentoring, and that cultural aspect was like, you noticed the thing that was missing and needed. So I'm wondering if you hear that from people using your resources, or see people that use your resources then show up at the gatherings that you have, the live gatherings, saying like, I need, you know, people and other parents. And
yeah, I think some of the cultural aspects are so sort of subtle and seamless that they're there. So for example, in Red Squirrel Resources, there's a video on beginnings and endings, you know, how we start and end a session with children, and how we can, just in the time where, I don't know how it is, probably it's the same all over the world, where parents start dropping off. Some of them are in a rush to get to work, so they drop them off 5-10 minutes earlier than you say, and others are late. And there might be a 20-minute window where children are just waiting for the group to convene. And what you can do in those 20 minutes of whether, you know, having some kind of arrival activity, matching the leaf to the seed or whatever it is in different baskets, and the kind of richness that can come from the really simple additions of finding the extra surface area for mentoring, basically. And yeah, how we form group agreements, like all of those kind of things are in there too. So it's not just the physical and practical aspects, but those other pieces are there represented and yeah, highlighted.
I'd love to ask about the evolution of the Nature Culture Network, because that was an interesting choice in the UK to call the network of people practicing deep nature connection, people connection, Nature Culture Network. Were you part of that? And how did that happen? And, you know, where did it go?
Yeah, so I think for a long time, we were trying to incorporate something called Art of Mentoring UK, and then realized it was something bigger than a one-week event that was needed as a holding entity, essentially. And I don't actually have clear recollection of how that name and everything came about, although I was on calls because my son was very young then and I was very sleep deprived. So I'm afraid I'm not the best person to answer that right now, but it's been a through thread for the Art of Mentoring events, also for other Deep Nature Connection work, whether it's year courses or one-off opportunities to do a rite of passage or something that comes out on this mailing list, which has been a really valuable thing to be a part of in and of itself as a network. It's providing that the interconnection and the weave that anyone can access.
Yeah, this is helpful for us to know, because we do encounter people who are in the UK or nearby who are saying, how do I find an event? You know, and the Nature Culture Network is still something that's a concern. They have a website, a mailing list that people can sign up for.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really Peter that credit should go to for attending that.
Yeah, Peter Cow has been like the ever ready bunny. And we have this commercial for the ever ready bunny that just never runs out of batteries. And it's this little walking rabbit with a symbol in its hand, and it just keeps going and going and going. Like, Peter has just been so steadfast to just to keep the drumbeat going in small ways and continuous ways. We had a nice podcast with him and Sky Maria Butenhout, who's as well, for Attracting Connections podcast. So people can find that episode if they're interested in hearing more. But it's called Nature Culture Network, and we'll put a link to that so people can find that as well, because I know that you had told me when we were visiting before we started recording today that you were dreaming up, because with the pandemic, because 2019 was our last big event at the Falkland Estate that we referenced earlier, and all around the world, they people just stopped running these events. And I think the UK is one of the first to kind of come back, sort of re-dreaming. And I think you had this sort of idea come to you and wanted to give birth to like a new iteration of this service in the community. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, it was really interesting as we started to talk about the hunger in a way for a big gathering again around these themes. And part of me was super excited and part of me felt really almost depleted by the idea of it. And I was like, how do I get all of me excited? What's needed? And it felt like something fresh was needed. And I'm sure somebody referenced an idea from Deborah Benham, actually. She wasn't on that call. And it just sparked something in me. And I felt like I'd get so excited about a fusion between using my hands or having an immersive experience in one thread, one guild, whether it's basket making or fire making, or the guild could be Deep Nature Connection, alongside having the kind of holding basket of the cultural aspects being modeled, but also being brought in presentation pieces, say the mornings being the classic content or the keystone elements that would be brought in an art of mentoring, with the afternoons being this lived experience that through the week of being in a basket making guild or a fire making guild, you get taken through the East feeling of basket making and the welcome and the story and the birthing of it all through the week. And so you've got this embodied experience through one example or one trend. And I can imagine the conversations that will happen in the harvests of certain themes that come out of different days. And I'm really excited that it's happening in a week's time, just about.
That's exciting. So it's coming back. You know, the people are starting to gather again, but in a slightly different form than in Falkland.
Yeah. With like a different thread alongside it. When we organize our mentorings and we put people into clans and all of this thing, their guild will then be their clan and there'll be directions within the guilds, and then it'll all mesh, because in your directions, you'll find out what the other guilds are doing. And so it's got that layer to it too.
Art of mentoring architecture, but guild skills focus, which I think is really cool.
Yeah. I was wondering if you would talk more, Victoria, about the skills focus and journeys that you've taken with particular skills and what that journey has fruited for you.
I remember before I was 12 and went on that family camp with Thomas that I mentioned earlier, fire was this thing that I wasn't really, or I didn't have many opportunities to be around it. And that changed completely watching him light a Bodril fire and then picking up some of his kits and having a go on it and getting smoke. And I can remember spending months over the following year shaping a Bodril kit, initially out of willow that resprouted in my conservatory rather than seasoned. So I thought it was good to go, but it wasn't. So you get all these learnings along the way with coyote tricksters of willow. And yeah, getting a childhood friend who had no idea about any of the bushcraft stuff to be on the journey with me. And like the first time we ran it and got smoke together just felt so satisfying. And to go from there to being one of the young people who can be relied upon to start ceremonial fires was just such an honor and a privilege. And then going through layers later in life with people like Sal Giancarelli and Helpers Mentoring Society, where I hadn't had this concept of doing a fire quest where you can go and be up with the sun honor the sun through the day, and as the sun's setting, light your fire and tend it through the night in your own space, tending the embers out just as the sun's rising the next day. And this kind of depth that can come from one element or one skill. I just mentioned a little party trick that came out of my wilderness awareness school year when I was determined to learn how to do hand drill. And had to let go of the determination through blisters to a point where I was just like, I'm just going to meditate every evening and every morning, just have a kit on my pillow for like 2 minutes. Anyways, by the time I was coming back to England, I had like a pocket kit that I could just whiz a coal out to light people's cigarettes in the bars and things. So there's, humor to the fire journey too.
That is a trick that I would love to learn. I also have I'm on a journey with hand drill, and I was on the journey with just being with it. So hearing your success is very inspiring. Thank you.
Victoria combined two things that you love, Sarah, working on your hand drill and meditation.
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant. Well, this has been a delight, Victoria, and just really, really glad to be reconnecting with you. It's been a little while, and glad to hear your stories and to feel you in your place with your son and just with your beautiful mind, because it's always inspiring to talk to you. Is there anything else you'd like to reflect on the way out?
I think I just want to offer up something that came up for me last week on a holiday program, a memory of being, I think I must have been a teenager still, and doing a blindfold drum stalk and being pretty much, you know, in shorts and a t-shirt, moving through the woods, getting myself into a bramble thicket and just listening for the sound of the drum. And this metaphor that arose in me after the whole experience, which is a bigger story than we have time for right now, but of that thing of, you know, sometimes you hit the bramble patches of life. And if you're listening for where your drum beat is, your North Star, you can just keep moving towards it one little step at a time. Maybe you lose your balance that step and you catch yourself. Maybe you're in a period of flow and it all opens up and the ground seems clear and you don't bump into anything for ages, you know, and you've got these different patches of life, but that anchoring back into, I know my North Star exists and I'm on a journey and I can keep listening for my direction.
Beautiful. And the irony that we get out of the bramble better with a blindfold on.
That is definitely part of the story.
Right? That deep listening and trust. Mm. And my reflection is just on the intergenerational healing that you are bringing, that John, you know, and Tom before him and his mentors, you know, passed to John, and that John and others passed to you, and just seeing you as a 12-year-old receiving nature, right? As your healer, as your caretaker, and how you've just stayed there in that place. And now you're bringing it to many, many people, and your child is receiving that gift. So thank you for this.
Mm. And hearing that, Sarah, I feel like I really just need to name and thank my mom, Jennifer Hewitt-Smith, and what she brings to my son, but also what she opened up and enabled for me in a massive way, and has championed the whole way along, despite whatever other challenges we might have faced. That's been really solid. And I'm really grateful to her for that.
Yeah, your mom is great. Yeah. Well, thank you, Victoria. Thank you, Sarah. And stay tuned. We'll put a bunch of links and resources on the podcast page to find, you know, Red Squirrel Resources and Nature Culture Network and more. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Tracking Connections. You can find everything related to the podcast and our current offerings at trackingconnections.net. We'll see you next time.